minute maximum for testimony. There's a clock on front of that big hunk of wood that counts down 3 minutes, and we only need your first and last name. You are not required to give us your address. We encourage you not to give us our address, your address. Our address is well known. And we'll be starting in just a few minutes, so we're glad you're here.
Oh, really?
No.
Somebody taped it. No, but I don't. Yeah.
Good morning. Today is Wednesday. It's 9:30 a.m., September 16th, 2009. The City Council will come to order. Good morning, Sue.
Morning.
Can you please call the roll?
Salzman. Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. Can you please read Council Communications Item 1293?
Request of Rhonda Fast to address Council regarding method of funding public services.
Ms. Fast, please come forward. Glad you're here.
Good morning. Ready?
Okay. Ready.
Good morning. My name is Rhonda Fast. I'm here today as a former City of Portland employee and as a citizen with concerns about the impacts of the drastic layoffs at the Bureau of Development Services. Last month, Marty Stockton and Charlotte Phillips came before Council to make you aware of the dire financial situation at BDS, to request immediate funding, emergency funding, so that basic public services can be maintained, and for your support to re-examine the funding structure at BDS during budget season. I'm here today to discuss the real impact of the cuts on the citizens of Portland, because all Portlanders are the beneficiaries of BDS's mission to promote the safety, livability, and economic vitality of this city. It is unfortunately the citizens of the city who will bear the immediate brunt and lasting impacts of such drastic cuts. Here are some examples of public services that will be affected by the layoffs. Over the last several years, many valuable process improvements and programs, such as permit-ready houses, landlord training program, and many more, have been implemented, giving BDS the title as the best Bureau of Buildings in the nation. These customer service gains will surely be erased. The zoning information line, as of September 30th, will no longer take live calls. The hotline normally responds to nearly 100 live calls a day. Now all callers will wait 24 to 48 hours for a response, no matter how simple or complex the question may be. Turnaround times and quality of work will suffer, with a third the staff remaining in land use services and plan review sections. Wait times in the Development Services Center, the DSC, will increase with fewer staff available. With no one left to work on forms, handouts, and the website, the public will be left without a reliable source of updated self-education tools. As a result, more customers will rely on the DSC, further increasing wait times. As of September 30th, there will be 8 commercial and residential combo inspectors left, yet that section still receives an average of 370 inspection requests per week. Customers will have to wait days for inspections. The ability to respond to emergencies, such as last year's landslides in southwest Portland and flooding in Vernonia, will be hindered with fewer staff available. Cuts to the neighborhood inspections program have reduced their staff from 16 to 4. No longer will this section respond to abandoned vehicles, tall grass and weeds, or owner-occupied housing complaints. These services are important to the citizens of this city, and to erode customer service gains made in the last 10 years is simply unacceptable. My concern is that the cuts will leave the Bureau paralyzed, unable to provide the most basic services to the public, let alone emergency response and quality customer service. My request to Council today is to release funds so that a basic level of service is maintained, and at next budget season, I ask for your support and for a more holistic and sustainable funding structure for BDS. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Sue, can you please read Council Communications item number 1294?
Request of Kate Marcello to address Council regarding method of funding public services.
Ms. Marcello, welcome to the City Council chambers. Glad you're here.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor Adams and members of Council. My name is Kate Marcello. Until August 12th, I worked as a city planner at the Bureau of Development Services. As Rhonda has stated today, and as Marty Stockton and Charlotte Phillips outlined last month, BDS is in dire financial straits. Emergency funding is warranted so that BDS can continue to deliver basic public services. As the others have stated as well, many BDS services are not funded directly by permit and land use review fees. One of these services does not have an official name. Most of us would probably just call it providing helpful customer service. Allow me to explain. I worked on design and historic design review cases, ranging from small-scale residential remodels to downtown storefront renovations to entirely new buildings. Through these reviews, I came into contact with a variety of Portlanders, homeowners, neighbors, neighborhood associations, architects, developers, and contractors. Months after a design review finished, often I received phone calls or emails from these previous customers with questions they had about an unrelated issue, such as questions about other types of land use reviews, or about the building code, or about stormwater or transportation regulations. I never once responded to anyone by saying, "I'm sorry, but I'm a design review planner. That's not my subject area." I always tried my best to find the answers to their questions myself, and if I couldn't provide all the information they needed, I made sure to refer them to the right person who could help them. Taking the time to respond to these types of inquiries is not tied to any permit or land use review fee. Yet I'm sure all of us would agree that this is beneficial and even essential work. The way I saw it, when someone contacted me later on with a question, that meant that they were satisfied with the service I had provided them and they trusted me to help them again. This fosters a relationship not just between an individual Portlander and an individual BDS planner. More importantly, this fosters a relationship between the citizenry and the city government as a whole. It is inevitable that BDS staff with severe personnel and budget reductions will find it increasingly challenging, dare I say nearly impossible, to continue providing this level of service. Overall workloads are only slightly down, so it will be necessary to focus on fee-supported work. Regardless of how dedicated BDS employees are, and how much they will want to continue providing that same level of service, it just won't be logistically possible, and it is the citizens of Portland who will suffer. I urge the Council to secure immediate emergency funding to stabilize and continue the basic public services that BDS provides. Additionally, a more holistic and sustainable funding structure should be considered for BDS during the upcoming budget season. And finally, I ask you to consider this. How will the culture of helpful customer service at BDS continue to be fostered if the path we're on is not altered? Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. And Council Communications is just an opportunity for the public to have 3 minutes to say whatever they want, and it's usually not a conversation, but I know I suspect I speak for all my colleagues up here when I say thank you for your service to the city. We're working hard on a variety of levels, everything from economic development to looking at the way we fund programs, efficiencies within city government, and hopefully we can hire you back just as soon as possible. So these are tough times. We actually cut 140 positions out of the budget. It did not have the impact of as many people, human beings, having to be let go because it was part of a hiring freeze. Bureau of Transportation, we've been cutting budgets for 8 years. So I understand this is incredibly painful, and we hear you. So I appreciate you being here today. Sue, can you please read the communications title, item number 1295?
Request of Natalie Teplitsky to address council regarding Sophie Liu, a victim and survivor of persecution in China.
Good morning. Welcome to City Council.
My name is Natalie Teplitsky. I am a reporter for the Epoch Times International. As a human rights advocate and a concerned citizen, I want to bring your attention to an urgent international issue. Too many people living in the United States take for granted the freedom to openly practice their beliefs without worrying about the consequences. Unfortunately, not everyone is as blessed. As such, I feel a certain responsibility to speak out for those whose freedom has been cut short and whose voice has been silenced by an oppressive regime. It has been 10 years since the Chinese government started a severe persecution of Falun Gong, an ancient practice of cultivating body and mind, and began its severe crackdown towards a peaceful group of law-abiding citizens. You may ask why Falun Gong is being persecuted in China while it is freely practiced in 80 countries all over the world. The answer is very simple. It's because of what they stand for. Their three core values are truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. These are the exact opposite of what the Chinese Communist Party stands for, which are lies, brutality, and intolerance. 3 years ago, a groundbreaking investigative report by two high-profile Canadian lawyers concluded that tens of thousands of Falun Gong practitioners in China were being killed so their organs could be sold to wealthy tourists seeking transplant deals. As you are sitting here at this meeting, every Falun Gong practitioner arrested in China undergoes an immediate blood test. No other prisoners in China are tested unless they have already been sentenced to death. Every young and healthy practitioner is given regular medical examinations. Unknown thousands of Falun Gong practitioners are kept alive in herds with their blood types, tissue types, DNA, you name it, all readily available on computers. They are slaughtered on demand for their organs and then secretly cremated. Compatible kidneys, livers, hearts, corneas are all available on notice ranging from 2 days to 2 weeks. You know, in all civilized countries, it takes years to get their transplants. In 1945, when the gates of the concentration camps in Germany were opened, an appalled international community exclaimed, "Never again," and "If only we had known," it became the slogan of decent people the world over. History will not allow our generation to once more fall back on the lame excuse, "If only we had known." We can say this time. That such a crime against humanity has never been seen before. And I am amazed that our government turns a blind eye to this practice. And our major media are also silent. So what can we do? Well, we could... Can I finish a sentence or no?
Please do.
Okay. So, well, we could at least play our part through a ban on transplant tourism. Believe it or not, Israel is the only country so far to make it illegal for its citizens to seek transplants in China. So I would encourage our leaders to express outrage at the inhumane practices of the Beijing fascist regime. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Sue, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1297?
Request of Ulisher Hardiman to address Council regarding respect and disrespect of the City Charter, the Oregon Constitution, and the United States Constitution.
So Sorry, item number 1296. Mr. Hardiman, welcome back.
Okay.
We're glad you're here.
Morning, good morning.
Good morning.
Isn't you glad I'm here? I'm not, under the circumstances. Mr. Leonard, with all respect, I mean, really, it's good to see someone that stood up for the respect and civility of Portland. I'm sorry that it came to what it did, but I'm happy that the fire does exist in you.
Okay.
Morning, Your Honor. Very quickly, by way of, I've sent you, give you a copy here. I think I can do this quickly. It's from the New York Times in front page. It's today's date. In reference to a United Nations inquiry concerning an Israeli attack on Palestinian populace as a war crime. It called it a deliberate, disproportionate attack designed to punish, humiliate, and terrorize a civilian population, radically diminish its local economic capacity both to work and to provide for itself, and force upon it an ever-increasing sense of dependency and vulnerability. With all due respect, I'm here this morning to postpone and hopefully adjust this August Assembly at a later date. If Your Honor does not mind, if I may recall to memory your words, and I'm still waiting for your staff. I go by and look, the car still hasn't came back, and I haven't been able to deliver papers, I can't deliver pizzas, so I haven't been able to earn that income, and my hammer's in there, and my harmonica's in there, so it really has crippled me severely. I'm completely impoverished. Sitting in front of you right now, I've got 15 cents. And I'm very ashamed to say that. I mean, so if I may be so bold, I don't know. I'd hope that by the time I report it to you, an illegality done by one of your minions that's completely against the laws of Oregon, of Portland, the city charter. My car was tagged, licensed, insured fully, ready to go make me some money. And, of course, when I make some money, I'll give you some of it, pay taxes, registered voter. But anyway, so address you later, hopefully with some positive news from your staff.
We're working on it.
Thank you so much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Hardiman. Sue, can you please read the title for Council Communications 1297?
Request of Annabelle Snow to address Council regarding positive experience with the Small Business Development Center.
Hi there. Ms. Snow, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you're here.
Me too. Help tell the story.
My name is Annabelle Snow. I am an acupuncturist and one of the owners of the North Portland Wellness Center. We are a multidisciplinary clinic in North Portland that offers acupuncture, Chinese medicine, chiropractic, and massage. I'm here today to share with you our story of how we got here. As we were beginning to dream up what our business would be, we really had no idea what we were in for. We were diligent in doing our research, and we found a property, as you can see from the visual, that needed a lot of work.
quite a before and after picture.
Thank you. Yes, it is. Some would say we were a little blinded by our vision. We had no idea what we were in for. So we found a building that needed a lot of work. It was chosen because of its inherent potential, but also because it was in the Interstate Urban Renewal District. So we, through our research, knew that we would be eligible for a lot of PDC loans and grants, and a lot of support through the city. We did apply for and were granted a Development Opportunity Services grant, storefront improvement, quality jobs program loan, and various other funding to help us get the project off the ground. So a year and a half later, we finally opened the North Portland Wellness Center. It took a lot longer than we thought. Through our PDC agreement, we were asked to meet with business advisors in order to help us with our business planning. Through that process, we were also offered free classes through the SBDC. So we took Small Business Management 1, Small Business Management 2, Opportunity Knox we were involved with. And I think most significantly, we were given the opportunity to have business advising one-on-one with different business advisors. Over the last year, we have had the opportunity to meet with Jackie Babicki Peterson for the last about year on a monthly basis. And I'm here to say today that that process of working with the SBDC and working with Jackie directly has made the difference in our business incredibly. We have experienced incredible growth over the last year. We have doubled our patient count, which is wonderful, but also has posed its own challenges. And so through our work with Jackie, we've been able to really weather that growth and really plan for our future. We currently employ acupuncturists, massage therapists, chiropractors. We have almost 3.5 full-time staff. We're in the process of hiring a new one right now. And I am under the understanding that there are cuts that are putting the funding for entrepreneurial development and training in dire straits, and that this essential training from the SBDC is going to potentially be no longer available for small businesses. And I'm here to say that our story is not unique. We had vision and passion and a ton of energy, but we really had no idea how to run a small businesses. I had always worked for other people, and it's very different running your own business. We're responsible for pretty much everything. And I think there are a lot of other businesses out there that really are benefiting from and will continue to need the support that we've been that we've been able to receive. So I'm here today to tell our story and to ask for continued support for small businesses.
We actually, the buzzer didn't go off for some reason.
Yeah, so I thought it was like, oh, well, gave me an extra couple.
40 seconds. The cuts that you're talking about are cuts that are coming through the state. We've actually increased, this council has increased funding for programs for small businesses about 25%, but the cuts that just because the cuts at the state level means that we're kind of treading water here at a time that you're pointing out small businesses need help more than ever. So thank you for helping to tell the story and to underscore the importance of these kinds of assistant programs. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. That gets us to the council or the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull an item from the consent agenda?
We have one poll, 1308.
1308?
Right.
Okay. Anyone wish to testify on the remaining consent agenda? Any discussion from council? Sue, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Leonard. Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Consent agenda is approved. We have a time certain at 9:30. Can you please read that title for 1298?
1298. Accept wildfire readiness assessment and gap analysis report. Portland Wildfire Fuel Reduction Project.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some brief opening remarks, but I'd like to invite the three chiefs to come forward. Chief Klum, Chief Santner, and Chief Merlo.
It's actually Chief Babcock. Oh, I'm sorry. Chief Klum is here. Didn't see you back there. Sorry.
Commissioner Leonard, would you like to do the presentation?
No.
Welcome. In the news recently, we've read about fires ravaging the Los Angeles area that included both the loss of life and extensive property damage. And just last week, there were several small fires near Powell Butte. In Portland, 20% of the city's acreage is urban green space. As development expands at the boundaries of our natural areas, the risk of significant property loss due to wildfires increases. In 2006, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, provided funding through the Portland Emergency Management, that's POEM, to address the risk of highly flammable invasive weeds. For the past 3 years, an inter-bureau project management team comprised of staff from Fire and Rescue, Parks and Rec, Environmental Services, Planning and Sustainability, the Water Bureau, and the Office of Emergency Management have worked diligently to coordinate project planning, public outreach and education, and on the ground looking at wildfire fuel reduction. This inter-bureau team has done a marvelous job. Their collaboration has resulted in the reduction of hazardous wildfire fuels on approximately 650 acres of public and private lands in Portland. And I want to be very clear. It is not a question of whether there will be a wildfire in our city, but rather when. When it occurs, we will take to heart the information available through this study and apply the actions outlined in the report that has been furnished to all my colleagues, part of their packet. As a commissioner, I am always encouraged when I have a chance to witness close collaborations between multiple bureaus. And that collaboration, of course, leads to a better product. And I want to thank the three of you and the leadership of all the bureaus that came together to do this work. We are looking forward to beginning the implementation of a citywide wildfire disaster mitigation plan. And before you, Council, is a citywide wildfire readiness assessment. And our crack team is going to briefly present their findings, and we'll be asked to accept the report. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the Council. I'm just delighted to be a chief for 5 minutes, sitting next to two chiefs. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, this report is a final product of a three-year effort known as the City of Portland Wildfire Risk Reduction Project. This process and the project became possible through a grant that PON received from FEMA. And it basically highlighted three things. One is that we have major challenges, and the report outlines those challenges and has about 30 recommendations. And in addition to that, there needs to be a lot of education with our community at large, particularly those areas that are close to our natural areas. And then the third, the outcome of this process was that we cleared 650 acres of our natural areas of very flammable invasive. And as a result, we also helped the habitats in those areas. And the areas that were treated were primarily in Forest Park, Powell Butte, and what is known as Willamette Escarpment. You are familiar with the area near Mock Crest, and then some areas above Oaks Bottom. And as Commissioner Fish mentioned, this has been a true collaboration, and one of the most important recommendations of this process is that this collaboration continues. And now with that, I'm going to turn to Carmen to say a few words.
Thank you, Sari. Good morning, Commissioner and Mayor Adams. Palm is very proud to be a sponsor of this wildfire risk reduction project and very pleased to showcase this project as a hallmark of interagency, interbureau coordination. Palm is the custodian of the Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan, and that's the vehicle with which we were enabled to get federal grant funding. The work accomplished by the Fire Bureau, by Parks, Environmental Services, Water, and Planning and Sustainability really moves us forward in the protection of our natural and built environment. And I want to thank the many individuals that had a part in this very successful project. Like planning, natural hazard mitigation is an ongoing process, and I really look forward to working with these and other bureaus in the future. Thank you.
Chief.
Good morning. Council, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. First and foremost, Portland Fire and Rescue fully supports the recommendations within the risk assessment and the gap analysis on this, and we're fully committed to see that we do everything that's identified in the report from Portland Fire and Rescue's side. Again, to echo this, this is a perfect example of interbureau collaboration. Not only did the benefits of the individuals that worked on this project open up those communication lines, but they definitely identified areas for increased preparedness and interoperability. And specifically, I'd like to thank Mark Wilson, Dave McAllister, Battalion Chief Chris Babcock, and Firefighter Chris Barney, as well as all the directors that supported them with the staff that was needed for the implementation of this. There's so many side benefits as a result of this. One of the key things from Portland Fire and Rescue side, it identified the need for enhanced wildland interface training. We have a baseline training that we delivered to our employees, but during this analysis of this, we actually took steps to increase that training that's delivered to all 700-plus sworn members in the fire service. But it also identified a core of 50 individuals that have expert training in different aspects of wildland-urban interface that we have now have this cadre of individuals that are going to be our wildland core response team within the city of Portland. It's also helped us as far as our interoperability with how we participate with the state mobilization plan. It also highlights the importance of having communications and interoperability and accessibility between all the bureaus. One of the other benefits that I see that we got out of this personally is that I also am Multnomah County's Fire Defense Board Chief. And as a result of this gap analysis, it really brings to light that of the need for Multnomah County to have a wildland mitigation plan. And I'll do everything in my efforts as Chief of Portland Fire and Rescue and as the Fire Defense Board Chief to work real closely with Carmen's office, Multnomah County Emergency Management, as well as all the other fire departments represented in Multnomah County to develop that plan as a priority. And thank you again for your time.
Chief, could I put you on the spot on one issue that's not in the report, but just to get your feedback? We do not regulate smoking in all of our parks and natural areas. But my sense is that cigarette smoking is one of the primary causes of some of the fires that happen in natural areas and in parks. While it's not one of the 30 recommended action items, is that something that you think that we should at some point take up and consider?
We could do that, and I think that's a good idea because human error is probably the major cause of our interface issues, whether it be individuals that are cooking or careless, smoking habits and so forth on that. That's primarily where we've seen, like, the second alarm fire that we had up on Kelly Butte last month was a result of a cooking fire in very dry conditions. I think there's a couple ways that we can approach this. We could do it via ordinance, or we can also do it through City Code Title 31 and the fire regulations to have restrictions on smoking, especially maybe look at a subcommittee to look at what is applicable as far as maybe during what we determine as the wildland risk season, which usually goes from July 4th through Labor Day.
Chief, I recognize this is an area of some controversy and overlapping regulation, but I would look forward to working with you and Commissioner Leonard just to take a look at that question.
Yeah, I think that it definitely has some opportunities.
Thank you. Council, we have a brief presentation to follow.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you a question? Do we have a plan for how we're going to map the areas and how we're going to fund the ongoing work?
You will receive a presentation that shows you the map of all the areas that have been identified. And in fact, we still have one additional $200,000 to $250,000 from the FEMA that we are going to continue this for one more year. And with that, we are going to focus entirely in Forest Park, so we will be able to remove the problem areas, about 200 acres.
Great, yes. Thank you.
So we have a very brief presentation. If the folks could come forward, and we'll do that and then take any additional questions.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Mark Wilson, FEMA Project Manager for Portland Parks.
I'm Chris Barney, a firefighter, Fire and Rescue.
Mayor Adams, City Council, Bureau Directors, thank you for providing the opportunity for us to speak today on behalf of the project management team. It's got a lot of moving parts, as you've been hearing. Chris and I are going to present a brief project overview describing FEMA project goals, objectives, and successes with a particular focus on the just completed wildfire risk assessment and gap analysis report. After a series of Mock's Crest wildfires in 2000 and 2001, four city bureaus received a grant from Oregon Emergency Management and FEMA, Federal Emergency Management. This grant has enabled, as you've been hearing from the Bureau Directors and Commissioner Fish, unprecedented coordinated wildfire education, planning, and fuel management activities on the ground between the four agencies that were the recipients of the grant. That said, there were many more other agencies involved. The project goal, as you see on the slide, is to reduce and manage wildfire fuels on public and adjacent private lands at the wildland-urban interface. Obviously, we care very deeply about these places, these natural area parks and open spaces, as they provide habitats for wildlife, native plants, and most importantly, people. They protect water quality and also provide for watershed health. You see the objectives on the next slide. and I'd like to talk briefly about some of the successes that we've had on this project. We designed and delivered citywide education programming. Included in that was wildfire safety and prevention presentations, mailings, with a particular focus on the focus areas, publications, and development of a project website, which I'd invite you to check out. It's portlandonline.com/wildfire. We partnered with advisors and neighborhood representatives to prepare long-term vegetation management plans and short-term wildfire fuel reduction projects on public and private lands. Again, if I refer you to the website to get specifics of those plans, both for the Escarpment, Forest Park, and Powell Butte. And then we reduced on the ground hazardous wildfire fuels on approximately 650 acres. At Oaks Bottom, this is a series of actual slides showing this is the Forest Park power line right-of-ways. And we also have, if you could back up, Chris, this is Oaks Bottom. Yes. These are before and after slides showing both before and after. And then the next slide is Mox Crest before and after. We were able to really go after a lot of weeds. So this has really been a multi-objective project. And then as a final product, we conducted a city wildfire readiness assessment and gap analysis.
The gap analysis that you've been hearing about, it covers 30 action items that have been identified as areas that not just fire, but all across the city that we can work to improve upon. Those 30 action items we're going to talk about, they fall generally in five different categories. We're going to give you examples so you're aware of some of the what we'd like to work on. In coordinating, there's definitely a need for a standing working group across the city bureaus to address the issues of wildfire that face us. So we're looking to establish that group from representatives from the different bureaus. With regard to training, if there were a significant wildfire that did come up in the city, fire and rescue would not be the only bureau responding, and we would be looking in for support at that incident from several different bureaus, namely police. We'd be utilizing maintenance for their flushers to bring extra water to some of the remote areas away from hydrants. We'd be looking for assistance from a NET team, you know, in to assist us. So those different groups and stakeholders have yet to have real significant training on how to support us and operate in a wildfire area. So we're looking to advance that training. With regards to communication, at this point, Parks has real difficulty communicating with each other and helping fire zero in on areas that are on fire or if there's medical emergencies in the different Parks areas. They have that inability to quickly communicate, so we're looking to enhance that ability for them. At this point, there are, with regards to planning, there are some contradictory codes that could be addressed that would further allow citizens to protect their properties against wildfire threats. And there are definitely areas that we want to continue to reduce the fuels that are currently there so we minimize the wildfire risks throughout our open space areas. There are 700 acres that have been identified in Forest Park as an example, and we've already worked on 150, so we have a significant amount of work to continue with. Rocky Butte would be another area of significant threat that we would like to address in the future.
We'd like to, speaking on a personal note, maybe I would like to thank my colleagues on Fire, Environmental Services, POEM, and all the other city agencies that have been involved with this project for demonstrating a true spirit of interdisciplinary cooperation for this project. I really feel privileged to have worked with them. And as Zeri just said, we have the opportunity to work another year expending additional FEMA money to continue our work on the ground. Collectively, we ask you to support the continuation of the work we have begun by taking action on the following four action items. First off, accepting the report and next directing the wildfire group and implementing the proposed actions on the report. I think you all have copies of the executive summary. On the reverse side of the executive summary are those 30 action items. Excuse me.
We're also looking, you know, as we go into the future and look ahead at the work that needs to be done from all bureaus' perspectives, there will be a need for us to pursue some funding sources to accomplish that work, and we're looking for your support as we pursue possible grants. So to accomplish that work, and with regards to fuel reduction, enhanced training, and updating equipment and such. Also, we really need to begin looking not just within the city of Portland, but to enhance our partnership at the city and county level and the regional level to accomplish some tasks that will better prepare us for an occurrence of wildfire, namely completing the update of the natural hazard mitigation plan that's due at the end of this year, and then beginning the work on a community wildfire protection plan for the county, which we would be strongly involved with. And this is an action that Chief Klum just referred to and is highly supported by the Oregon Fire Defense Board.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity to speak today. We'll take any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Good work.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you for your outstanding work. I'm still grieving over the loss of the Fire Bureau, but Randy and I are now in mediation over that. So,
okay.
Thank you for your terrific job.
Thanks for your support, Commissioner.
Thank you. Has anyone signed up to testify for this matter?
No.
Anyone in the room wishes to testify on Council Calendar Item Number 1298? Thank you, gentlemen. Sue, would you please call the roll on, it's a report. Do I hear a motion to accept the report?
Motion.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept the report. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Leonard.
This is outstanding work. I had the opportunity to get briefed beforehand by the Fire Bureau. I am always impressed with the work product that the Fire Bureau produces, but equally impressed with Palm and Parks in coming together and really addressing a public safety issue in such a collaborative fashion. It's very reassuring, if not inspiring. Thank you. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, I appreciate the coordinated interbureau work that's gone into this issue, and wildfire reduction is essentially interjurisdictional in nature, so it's good to see everybody working together. We've known for some time that there have been problems in interjurisdictional interagency coordination in conflicting city policies, mapping, funding, public outreach, and so it's good to see this coordinated approach, and thank you all for your work. Thanks to the Technical Advisory Committee and the three Citizen Advisory Committees that prepared and implemented the long-range natural resources restoration plans and carried out multiple on-the-ground projects in the three focus areas. And I concur with the need to continue with the next steps, and I appreciate all the work. Aye.
Fish.
To Carmen Merlo and Zeri Santner and Chief Klum, thank you very much for your leadership. It's a pleasure to see you this morning. I do want to just mention, as previously was put in the record, the names of the project management team, because these are the folks that really did a lot of the key work. Chris Babcock from Fire and Rescue, Astri Dragoy from Parks and Rescue, Dave McAllister is here. Dave, thanks for your good work, Parks and Rescue. Patty Reuter from Emergency Management, Mark Schmidt, Fire and Rescue, and Mark Wilson, Parks and Rec. So thanks particularly to those individuals for their good work. Chris, thank you for your presentation. Outstanding. And, in my briefing, I learned that, you know, we have had over the last 100 years a number of fires which caused enormous damage in places like Forest Park and elsewhere. So we're trying to get a little bit upstream here and put together the kind of preventative measures which hopefully will lead to avoiding that happening again. So excellent work, great example of interjurisdictional work, and I'm particularly pleased when Fire Poem and Parks work so effectively together. Aye.
Adams.
I think all the appropriate thank yous and acknowledgments have been said, so I just want to underscore each of those, and very pleased that our response to the largest, most recent fires has been so positive, and I want to commend you for your willingness to take a look anew at everything we had in place up to that point and clearly move us much further forward. So thank you all very much. Aye. Report is approved. Can you please read Council Calendar Item 1308?
1308, accept vehicle donation from U.S. Marshals for the use by the Portland Police Bureau.
Morning, Mr. Fenn.
Good morning.
Is there any reason why we should not do this?
No.
Okay. Do you, either one of you, believe that there is, should we do this?
Yes.
Okay. Would
we
you?
We need an amendment.
Yes, I know.
Okay.
Do you want to show us your amendment?
Sure.
And can you give us a quick summary of it?
Yes, brief introduction. Council needs to approve all vehicle donations that come into the city. This one is from the U.S. Marshal. I'll actually turn it over quickly, 30 seconds, to Commander Eckhart and Jim Schindler, who's a police fleet manager that are here.
Hi. The U.S. Marshal Fugitive Task Force has one detective assigned. They give us a vehicle and pay the overtime. And in this case, they're actually going to buy a vehicle and donate it to the police bureau as part of a push to get 600 vehicles pushed out nationally.
That's great.
So that's what this is, part of a new program.
Excellent. Anything you want to add?
Well, they're giving us a short timeline, and that's why we're here. City Fleet's aware of this. They're behind us. They
yep.
With this, and they're doing some work on the background. Hopefully we can get this completed by the end of the month.
I'll entertain a motion to make the amendment.
So moved.
Second. So moved and seconded to make propose this amendment to Council Calendar Item 1308. Discussion?
Just what kind of a vehicle is it?
I think that the detective is looking at a van. It's something he needs to be able to be in 24 hours a day on surveillance, depending. And they send him all over the Pacific Northwest. So that's kind of what we're looking at, or maybe a larger sedan.
So you have options?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. We just have a price range.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? All right. Sue, would you please call the roll on the amendment?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
I just want to say, Brendan, that was the finest presentation that I've
thank
seen
you, sir.
From the Chief
appreciate
of Staff,
that, Commissioner.
At least in the last week. Thank you for your good work. Aye.
Wow. Evans.
Aye. Amendment is approved. Anyone here wish to testify on the amended council calendar item 1308? Sue, would you please call the roll on the amended item number 1308?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1308 is approved. Can you please read Council Calendar Item, second reading, 1313?
Authorize a grant agreement with the Small Business Legal Clinic for $120,000 to provide continued support for two salaried positions, a clinical law professor and an operations manager.
Can you please call the roll?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, for having the presentation last week. This is a really great program, and I know that you have been very dedicated to continuing the funding for it to provide support in the community and for the Lewis and Clark folks. Aye.
Fish.
I would say that make no mistake, this council in the last year has made a tremendous commitment to small business under the mayor's leadership, and whether it is the general fund dollars that have gone to Portland Development Commission to help small businesses, I think almost $2.5 million, whether it's reforming the business license fee from a before the fact to an after the fact tax, whether it's adopting a novel buy local provision, which allows some of our local businesses to participate and compete, and in addition, funding this clinic, which in my judgment is also a great example of leverage, because for every dollar that we're investing, if we're successful in launching a new business that ultimately becomes a taxpayer, there's a huge return for the city. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Aye, thank you. 1313 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance number 1314?
Create a local improvement district to construct multimodal improvements for the Northrop Loop streetcar alignment.
Good morning, Ms. Deedy. How are you?
I'm well.
Now, we've had this come before us in the form of a resolution.
Yes.
So you're back with the implementation language.
Exactly.
Anything different from what we described to council at the first presentation?
The only thing different is that if you look at the map on Exhibit B, on the far right-hand side, the long, skinny parcel, we had not included it on the map before. The description included it, but we'd forgot to color that parcel. It is a parcel owned by the Portland Development Commission, and they are aware of all of this. So that's the only change there.
Okay. Discussion from council?
Question. May I say one thing, Mayor, before we forget? We do have three invited guests today, Tiffany Schweitzer, Chris Smith and Patty Gardner. Okay, just wanted to make sure.
I figured I'd give staff an opportunity to ask you any questions.
Thank you. That would be fine.
So could you just clarify about the remonstrances, what the process is here?
Yes, the process on remonstrances is that at least 3 weeks before the hearing date, we mail a notice to all of the property owners within the proposed district and tell them, you know, when the hearing is going to be, what the project is, how what it's going to cost, and then we give them a preliminary estimate of their assessment. So they all have that information. There's also a requirement that if they wish to object through the form of a written remonstrance, they must send something to the auditor's office and liens by the Wednesday before the council. We did receive 6 remonstrances. There are a total of 996 tax accounts on this. The 6 remonstrances represent 0.32% of the total assessed value. The level of the remonstrances can be found in Exhibit D, and the summary of that information and the reasons for that and the responses are in Exhibit E.
Thank you. So unless the number of remonstrances get to a certain level, everybody is in.
Yes, exactly.
And just to clarify for the estimated assessment, the biggest one is $359, and that's a one-time assessment?
It is a one-time assessment.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Deedy. Could our 3 invited guests please come up? And I just ask you to answer the question, is there any reason, in your opinion, why the City Council should reject this?
No.
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 Right. Council, have questions for this panel?
Well, I actually would be interested in what they might want to say.
Please be swift.
All right, I will. Chris Smith, as you know, I have a variety of interests in streetcar. I'm here today primarily as a property owner in the assessed district. I got an assessment for the minimum $100 for the rental unit, the investment unit that I bought in the streetcar lofts. So I'm a next-door neighbor to the folks in Bridgeport who are remonstrating my vast real estate holdings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking as a property owner, I think the question of the remonstrances is to really what's the value of this project? And to me, this puts the property that I own at kind of the center of the streetcar universe. There will be departures from, you know, a few blocks away to northwest, to downtown, to the east side. There's tremendous value. And as to the concerns expressed about sort of activity level and all of that perhaps being a nuisance, you know, I would pose the question, what happens if we don't do this? If Tiffany builds out the north of the Pearl at the density that's allowed and we don't have good transit service, there are going to be a whole lot of cars that will be a much greater nuisance than any activity related to streetcars. So I think this is, from my view as a property owner, this is a no-brainer.
Thank you. Ms. Gardner?
Very quickly, our perspective from the Neighborhood Association is we're part of the Central City. And I know what Tiffany's got in mind, and it's a lot of business. It's not just residential, but also office at the north end of the Pearl District. And the idea of creating a streetcar system versus a streetcar line is key, and we can't do it without the Northrop alignment. So,
thank you, Ms. Patty Gardner, for the record. Tiffany Schweitzer.
Tiffany Schweitzer, Hoyt Street Properties. Mayor, commissioners, as I said when I was here before, we have a lot of work still to do. 9 acres still to develop. We're kind of caught in this world that we're all in today, and we need every tool available, whether that be parks, transportation, and, of course, the density that we're trying to provide. If I had my way, as I said to you before, I'd try and get the streetcar even further north, because we will be building an additional 1,500, 2,000 residential units as well as office that will need to use that mode of transportation. So very important. The cost is minimal, and the cost actually is most significant to us, given the vacant land, the retail we own, and our own units that we still haven't sold. So,
thank you all very much in your own way, helping to bring this forward to council for implementation. Appreciate it. Anyone else wish to testify on council calendar item 1314? This is an emergency ordinance. Can you please call the roll?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, I think it's a credit to the staff work and Ms. Schweitzer's and everybody else's who provided an open, transparent, and good communication throughout the process. So we have 6 remonstrances out of 132 property owners in this area. And that also is remarkable that there are 132 people living this close to the street line, and that's great. More properties, more people. So thank you very much for your work. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1314 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, Council Calendar 1315?
Vacate the public way between lots 13 and 14, Flora Meadows, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Please call the roll.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, I want to thank the folks in the Centennial Neighborhood Association who provided me additional information on this, and also the good staff work, particularly Patty Hicks, Tom Lewis, and Louise Cody from Centennial. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1315 is approved. Can you please read the title for ordinance calendar number 1316.
Authorized revenue bonds for the Resource Access Center.
Mr. Johansson, Mr. Russ, Commissioner Fish.
And I think Margaret Van Vliet is joining us.
Oh, Ms. Van Vliet, is she here?
Ken, why don't you start and we'll make sure she's here.
Certainly. Good morning, Mayor. Mayor Adams and members of the council. I'm Ken Russ, the director of the Office of Management Finance, and with me this morning is Eric Johansson, the city's debt manager. The ordinance that is before you for first reading is to authorize the issuance of revenue bonds, the proceeds of which will be used to fund the city's contribution to the Resource Access Center. And I'm going to have Eric talk a little bit about the financing and what this will allow us to do. He's been deeply involved with this transaction, and I'm going to turn it over to him for discussion.
Thanks, Ken. This ordinance does authorize bonds to be issued for the Resource Access Center. The city's participation in the project will be in all three components of the project, including the low-income housing component, the day use center, and the men's shelter. Total cost for the project is currently estimated at $46.8 million. Of that, the PDC and the city have agreed to provide $29.5 million in funding for project costs. Other significant sources that will come into the project include tax credit equity as well as cash contributions from HAP and in addition, some other smaller sources. Now, the city's source of funding for the project is expected to be tax increment revenues from the River District Urban Renewal Area. We're still negotiating with the various parties in the transaction the final form of the participation of the various parties and the security that will underlie those obligations. But we expect that we'll be back to the council probably on October the 21st with one or more final definitive ordinances that will implement the city's financing for the project. I expect that these ordinances will authorize both the interim and the takeout financing for the project using River District Urban Renewal funding. As I mentioned, since tax increment financing is part of this project, I expect that the PDC Commission will take action probably on October 14th, requesting that the city issue bonds for the project. And as Ken mentioned, this is a non-emergency ordinance, so we'll move to second reading next week. I'm happy to take any questions.
Margaret, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to provide a quick project update. This is Mayor Adams and Commissioners, I'm Margaret Van Vliet, Housing Bureau Director. Glad to be here and glad to be providing a bit of an update. This is, as you know, a terrific project and an important one for the Housing Bureau. So a couple of quick updates. I know you've been hearing about this over the last several months. So since we were last here officially, we did receive and are very grateful for $1 million in new ongoing general fund that'll help really support the supportive services that are to be delivered to the folks who take advantage of the Access Center. And so that's an important piece that was not yet resolved when we were back here several months ago, and I just wanted to sort of thank the council for that because that's going to be critical to the success of the project. We're working hard with partners, including Transition Projects, to really outline what the full complement of services should be in the Day Access Center, and looking at a variety of things that really are focused on helping Portlanders end their homelessness and manage kind of health and well-being matters in real time. We're just using a half block now, and so work continues to design a complementary project on the other half of the block U. And we are working, as Eric says, towards a closing next month, and construction start this fall. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I would also just acknowledge that it was the mayor that put the $1 million in his budget for ongoing, which was critical, because some of the folks who were less than enthusiastic